happy to finally have you on here and really excited. I've been following you on Instagram and feel like I kind of know you from your pictures and your words, and you have quite a following on there too. So welcome. I'm so happy that you're here.
Oh, thank you. I'm really happy you reached out. It's always fun to meet people and get to talk about writing and story.
That's always,
I love it.
Well, I know that you're in Hawaii too, and I do feel like that kind of connects us. And you know, I was talking to you earlier that this time that we're going through has just been so difficult, and I know you've been posting stuff as well. How has it been for you? And you know, as a writer, I think, just to go off a little bit, I know some writers are having difficult times just because of all the tragedies and the racial injustices going on. And even for me, it's been really difficult. How has it been for you?
For me, it has been eye-opening. Mm-hmm. I think as a white woman who has never thought of herself as a racist, I'm in an interracial marriage, so I've never really thought of that, but I also am now becoming very aware of the fact that perhaps I wasn't as aware of what I may have been doing to perpetuate mm-hmm. systemic racism, not knowing, being ignorant of it. And so this whole last week and a half, 2 weeks, I've spent a lot of time researching and learning and listening to people talk and process what they're going through, and it has opened my eyes in a way that I just didn't realize. So for example, just understanding what is meant by white privilege, what is meant by white fragility, and what is meant by white perfectionism, and how I was able to articulate, or not articulate, but able to see myself in those things and being like, oh, that's ugly, I don't like that, and now being like, I need to fix that.
Wow.
You know, so I think, and then take it a step further, it's not just me fixing it, but now finding ways to try to educate the people in my life who maybe don't understand, and doing that with grace and love, hopefully. That's always my goal. But it's been very eye-opening for me, but it's also been very heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, to think that, to be made aware of the ugliness in your country that maybe you didn't, and in the world that you didn't necessarily, didn't have firsthand experience with.
Mm.
And feeling like maybe you were a part of it, and that's difficult.
Thank you so much for your honesty in sharing that. It's a very difficult topic and uncomfortable, and really insightful to be able to see our own areas that we need to work on. And for myself as well, you know, like growing up as a Japanese American woman, I have just been taught, and I was going to write about this too, that it's not good to speak up. And so, you know, I have a minor in ethnic studies, and racism and discrimination, prejudice, stereotypes, all those things, historical, has been a passion of mine, but I have been pretty quiet about that. And so that has also been eye-opening for me. And it's been, you know, I'm a very sensitive person. I'm an INFJ, and all the stuff that
too.
You are. Oh my God. I did not know that. That is amazing. You know, it's just so funny because when you speak and when I read your words, I felt connected to you, but I didn't know. And every time I meet someone else with INFJ, it excites me because, you know, we're very rare. I think like the percentage is like 2% of the population or something. I remember telling my husband, you know, there's only a few of us in the world. Like, oh my God, that's really amazing that you're that way. You're the same, whatever, what is it called?
That's a fun thing to connect with.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, yeah, so I was saying that maybe that's why it has impacted you as well. But I do think it's important. And the thing that keeps me hopeful is that we're talking about it, and that it's given me courage to speak up more. And it's just been emotionally draining in so many ways. But I think part of that is because I'm really pushing myself to speak up when it was really, it's almost like a survival thing to not speak up in my culture because of all the historical racism that happened in Hawaii from the plantation era and being in concentration camps. It's just, I felt like it was a generational thing passed down to me. So I just was like, oh my God, it's very draining to speak up. But my speaking up and feeling drained is nothing compared to what other people are going through. And so it's important. And so I'm glad that you encouraged me to do this, and I just didn't want to not give it the respect it needs, because it is important right now, and I didn't want to, I mean, I was thinking, you know how everyone's saying to, you know, things will go back to normal, or things will go back business as usual, and I just hope that's not the case. Like, I hope that all these things that are happening right now is going to change us for the better, and just, I feel like this administration or this time in our life has really pushed all the things, all our wounds, and hopefully mm-hmm. we're going to be able to confront them head on, no matter how uncomfortable it is, because I think it's necessary, and people shouldn't be dying because of that. So I didn't want to, And so, I mean, I think it's important to talk about. And so thank you for saying all the things that you did and sharing. And like I said, it is a really difficult topic, and difficult to be honest and authentic and vulnerable and saying the things that is hard to say. So thank you for doing that. I wanted to comment.
We can't grow and move forward if we aren't willing to put ourselves out there and be honest and vulnerable. And that really kind of goes back to that whole white fragility thing of not being able to step up and say, I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I've been wrong, and I want to learn. I want to be better. So, I think that it won't get better without the people who are in that position of power, right or wrong, without them stepping up to say, this, things have to change.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there has to be
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I just feel like there has to be a way for us to connect. I was thinking about this a lot in a way that's not shameful and not pointing fingers, but so that we can compassionately listen to everybody's point of view without judgment. Because when we speak up and we share our prejudices or what we're thinking, and without, I guess, labeling that as prejudices, but just being able to speak about it with compassion, I think that we can honestly share things and hear each other. Otherwise, it's just kept mm-hmm. underground, like it's been for years, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
So thank you. Anyway, I also wanted to tell you that I just think your website is so beautiful. I know you live in Hawaii. How long have you been living in Hawaii for?
Oh, I've been in Hawaii since 97. So it's 23 years.
Oh, that's a long time. And before,
I reached that point almost. This next year I will live the same amount of time in Hawaii that I lived in Oregon, which is where I'm originally from with my husband.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm reaching that threshold.
Yeah. That is amazing. I think you've been living here longer than I was consistently. I mean, I'm born and raised in Hawaii, but I went away for school, and I did come back, and then I've just been here for about 6 years. So that's amazing. And you
Welcome
are you?
Home.
Thank you. And you where live? Are you from Portland, Oregon?
No, I'm from actually a very small town in southern Oregon called Klamath Falls, Oregon. Kind of in central southern. And it's a very small town with a very small population that's very rooted in agriculture. So I met my husband at a local college there called Oregon Institute of Technology, and he's a Waianae boy.
Okay.
And he was there playing college football, and that's how we met.
Wow. I went to U of O, and I probably met a lot of people from that area, and my cousin lives in Portland. I have friends there, so I go there maybe once every few years, but it is also a beautiful place. And some of the pictures that on your website, is it from Oregon? Well, one of the pictures I'm looking at, the black
pictures?
There's like a black you're standing in front of a black building with number
gold. Oh, I think that's in Washington. I took my daughter on a road trip when she was a junior. And we went up, and she was thinking about going to Bellingham. So we ended up in Bellingham. She took that picture.
That's a beautiful picture. Your website is so beautiful. Oh my gosh, I love it.
Thank you so much.
I love your website. So I was reading on your website, too, that living in Hawaii has inspired you in ways you could never imagine. And I wanted to hear more about that. I read some of the chapters of your book, and I saw that you have incorporated some of that into your work. Is that what you meant by that?
Yes. Well, I have had the absolute unique privilege of being a teacher at Kamehameha Schools as well. My children are Hawaiian, part Hawaiian, my husband is Hawaiian, and I've spent time teaching Hawaiian and learning and being kind of immersed in the culture at Kamehameha Schools, which is really kind of in that I don't want to say transition, but they've transitioned, but now they're moving towards really identifying what it means to be a Hawaiian school, mm-hmm. educating Hawaiians. And so as a faculty member, I had the opportunity to just be immersed and surrounded by amazing educators grounded in Hawaiian culture. And it has just taught me so much and made me a better human being. But as a teacher, trying to pull texts for my Hawaiian children or Hawaiian students, but mixed race often, it's never just like full Hawaiian, right? Most kids are an amalgamation of many different ethnicities. Trying to find texts that speak to them. Mm-hmm. And I found it very challenging to do so, just because we at this point don't have those texts for them. And so I wrote Abby from Swimming Sideways kind of with that in mind, this idea that she's, I wanted a story that connected to my own kids in a way. And that's kind of why I wrote it. But I did so with the recognition that, okay, you are a white woman writing a mixed race. Two of those characters in that series are mixed race. And what does that mean? So I didn't do that cavalierly. I approached it recognizing that in myself and then seeking help from experts. So my colleagues at Kamehameha, anyone who could offer a viewpoint about her perspective and kind of sign off on that being reflective of experience. And so I had sensitivity readers to help guide me to make sure that I was not offering stereotypical, unhealthy stereotypes, but rather ones that would uplift culture, if that makes sense.
Yes, that's great that you did the research to do that. I know for myself, and that takes a lot of courage, I think, to, number one, decide that you're going to write about something that, you know, you make me feel unfamiliar with, but familiar with in a personal way, and then also to do the research so that you become aware and responsible in like how you portray the characters. So that's really great. I reading my middle grade and trying to incorporate race in there, it's very challenging because mm-hmm. you know you have a responsibility as an author, and not all people or not all writers do that. So right. I know, and I can tell that you're a teacher, and I saw that you have a master's in education, is that correct?
I do. Yeah. I do. Master's in curriculum and development for secondary.
So did you, when you got that master's, did you ever think, oh, one day I'm going to be an author?
Actually, I wanted to be an author long before I ever wanted to be a teacher. I wrote my first story when I was about 8 or 9. And I thought, that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And that's how I ended up getting my undergraduate in English.
Oh, funny, and, me too. I have that too.
You know, the world just works in interesting ways, mm-hmm. and it isn't always clean. The way that you move from one phase and one season of your life into the next. And so I ended up pursuing a degree in education after that. And that's how I got into teaching. So in the midst of teaching, I was also writing through that, growing as a writer. And it wasn't until... Well, my father passed away in 2017, and it was very unexpected, and I really had to face the grief that I was feeling and kind of explore those feelings of missing him and who I was as a human being and what... death makes you look at how are you living, right? And so I realized that I had put aside these dreams of writing... Mm. Because I was comfortable and I just had experienced so much rejection from the traditional publishing world by that point, I was like, maybe this just isn't my path. Mm-hmm. And so I was content to just like keep teaching, and that must be what I would do. I was meant to make other writers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole Mr. All Hollands Open phenomenon.
Yes.
So then I just decided after that I just needed to pursue that. And, so I did, and that's where Swimming Sideways came from.
Is that your first book?
No, I have several books. They're just not worth reading.
Oh, my gosh.
That was probably my think that's probably my fourth book I've written. And that whole series started way back in 2008 or 9 when I first started writing it. Mm-hmm. But it was just totally different. It was a paranormal, because that was the rage, and I was super inspired kind of by that whole idea of vampires and werewolves and angels and demons and the whole like, and that's where it started. And if you go to Wattpad, I put up an early version of it, which is just terrible. But it's fun. Yeah. It's fun in the sense that you get to see writing and how it grows. Yes. So you can look at that version, that first version, and be like, oh my gosh, this is just awful. And how over time, as you develop craft as a practitioner, and you do your reading and your research, and you just keep going, it can become something stronger, like what Swimming Sideways has become for me. So I can see my growth, which is, I think, for any artist, that's really what we're striving towards, right? That growth and that building as a practitioner. So anyway, I don't know where I was going with that, but it wasn't my first book. It was probably like the fourth, and that one was probably like the 10th iteration of where it started.
I think that's important to say, because I think a lot of people who want to become authors, published authors, they don't know. I mean, even for myself, like, I just recently shook off this, like, fantasy that I had. I don't know if, you know, I also, as a kid, I've always wanted to be a writer, but I just thought it was going to be easy, you know? Like, I thought I had this vision of who I was as a writer, like, and when I would write it, it would not sound that way. Like, why does the words come out sound terrible? But in my head, they sound, you know, perfect. And it's interesting that you mentioned that you wanted to be a writer since you were 8 or 9. And I think a lot of the authors that I talk to, it's like they've always had that dream. But then, you know, the same thing, life happens. But I wonder how much of it is fear. I mean, some authors have told me that they just didn't think they could be a writer, that they just didn't have it in them, or they were too afraid. And it's a very common thing where we choose parallel careers because it's safer until something mm-hmm. happens. And so I sometimes difficult, challenging things, although, you know, it's hard and we don't wish it on anybody. Like with your father, it's so hard and I'm sorry about your loss. It's almost like during these really tragic times that we are pushed and the thing that we're supposed to do comes forth. And so it sounds like it's what happened to you. I mean, did you have any fears, do you think, about becoming a writer?
I think there were fears, not about becoming a writer, but more of a fear of facing truth in writing.
Wow.
And what I mean by that is, like, just kind of when you think about how you're raised and the traditions and the precepts or the perceptions that are put into your mind as you're growing up in those formative years, then you go to write and you hold back because you're afraid to put in something that might hurt mm-hmm. or offend or hurt the people who've raised you, right? Or question mm-hmm. the idealism with which you've been raised, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, as I went through my journey as learning craft and developing who I was as a writer, was never afraid to write, but I was afraid, and I didn't realize it, like, it wasn't at the front of my brain thinking, I'm afraid to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that, it was just more of kind of a back latent thing that was like, mm-hmm. I held back my writing because of it. And now I feel like I still struggle with it because that will always be there, I think, yes. But now I face it better. And I'm like, I can't shy away from telling mm-hmm. the story, or I can't shy away from telling the truth, because I'm afraid.
That is just,
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I'm nodding my head because that is exactly how I feel. And I don't know if it's an INFJ thing or a writer thing, but I just came to that realization maybe about a year ago or so. And it's changed the way that I, you know, edit and revise my writing, because it there's a self-consciousness when you write, and it's almost like you want to hide sometimes from what comes out, and then you do it unconsciously, you hide behind your words. And I actually wrote about that, about hiding behind your uh-huh. words. And maybe it is because we're more, you know, introspective and more conscientious, but it's that fear of being exposed, right? And
Right.
Even if it's a character, there's something there that, I mean, I do it too, so much so that I have to dig until, like, I find, what am I trying to say? I'm blocking myself. So I get it. How are you able to do that now? Are you working on a book right now?
I am, actually. I just finished a new book, which I'm in the process of going through, like, the next stage of writing. So I've finished it. I've gone through the first round of heavy edits, and now I'm doing kind of just like the cleanup copy editing. Wow. To get ready for publication. But I had to really face the truth in this book, because it's about, I was raised as in a very conservative Christian home, mm-hmm. that was really about those traditional Christian values, right? So that, and this story really pushes those boundaries, and mm-hmm. it pushed me in a way that I had to look at myself and what I believe about specifically women, mm-hmm. and sexuality, and what it means to be sexually empowered, wow. and how the patriarchy, or the idea of religious patriarchy, really kind of tries to control and manipulate beliefs about who we are as women and what we believe about ourselves, and how sometimes we can get caught up in that. So this book really has pushed me in a way that I struggled, and I struggled the whole time writing it, because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going against my faith, I'm going against my ideology, and really having to come to terms with the fact that perhaps this isn't about faith and ideology and my personal belief system at all, but how do you do that with grace, so that you're not hurting someone when you tell the truth? I don't know. Wow. And I don't know that if you can, but...
Yeah. What a difficult topic. I am so impressed by you. How did you come up with this idea, and what made you decide that you want to tackle it? I would just be so scared. I wouldn't know how to approach that. I mean, I just admire you that you can do that.
There's a couple things. One, I'm highly faithful. I spend a ton of time. I spend every day... in my reflection journal, in my, you know, my Bible, and I spend time, you know, in prayer. And I just felt compelled that this was a story I needed to tackle. Wow. But it didn't mean make it an easy story to tackle, because really it's about purity culture and the ways it's detrimental.
Yeah.
And so it was, I knew that I was tackling a subject that I had been raised to believe, but didn't believe, and I know that it's going to push boundaries, and it'll push the boundaries of even my own family, because that's where I was raised to believe that, right? So I don't know how I do it, other than the fact that I'm a faithful human who spends a lot of time reflecting and being in that faith and just coming to peace with it. And I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're doing the work, right? You're doing the emotional, spiritual work to be able to write something like that, and that's why you have the strength, and you sound like it was like a calling, like, you know, to write certain things. And I have certain, you know, manuscripts that I keep coming back to, even though they're not ready, but because I feel called. And I do feel like those are why we write, you know, because we have some kind of, there's something that we need to address, and it's important, you know, like some kind of message. And did you feel like that for all of your books?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Did you feel that way for all of your books? Were you called to write all of your books in different ways?
I would say that initially, when I first started back in the 2000s, early 2000s, when I was writing novels, no, those early works were really about developing craft, and it was just a story, and I would write the story, and it was based on inspiration, because I loved reading certain kinds of stories, so those are the kind of stories I would write. But Swimming Sideways, The Ugly Truth, The Bones of Who We Are, and now The Story Stars Tell, all of those have been felt more like a calling, because all of them deal with difficult topics kids face. And I write YA just because I spent so much of my life with kids, 15, 16, 17, 18, that I think that's probably where, I think a lot of people get into teaching because they say, I want to make a difference in kids' lives. And I think in some ways, teachers do have that opportunity, but I think there's also a piece missing, which is the family is so important. And I look at my own family, mm-hmm. who is an amazing family. I don't want to mischaracterize them. They're mm-hmm. fantastic. But those ideologies often filter right into our adulthood, and that doesn't make them right or wrong or whatever, but that's teachers only have so much ability to help inspire change. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It really comes down to family. So I guess the stories in some way connect to that idea of how can connect, and it's stories that do connect, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It helps us. Somebody, I think it was on my Instagram the other day, said something like, they open stories, allow us to connect from a distance, but to see ourselves reflected in them.
Mm.
And then to then maybe shape the way that we perceive ourselves in the world. And I just thought that was such a beautiful way to look at it. Yes, they allow us that distance. It's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if I've answered your question, Grandy.
It's so interesting, everything you're saying. Like, I do think that, and I wonder if the earlier books that you wrote were just mirroring, like, what you're going through at that time, and then now you're at a different stage of your life, and so that's why you're writing different things. Mm-hmm. I just find it interesting. Are you a pantser or a plotter? I wanted to ask you for your book.
Oh, that's a great question. I am probably both. I often will start a story without any preconceived notions, just because a character started talking to me, or I have a specific scene in my head, and so I'll just go. And so I'll just write, and I'll write until I get to a point where I'm like, okay, I have no idea where I'm at, what I'm doing. And that's kind of when the plotter kicks up. And I do what I call character interviews. And in the character interviews, I speak with the characters so I can get to know them a little bit better. And often when I do those character interviews, I get a sense of, oh, now I understand why you're doing whatever this is in that scene, or I know how to flesh that out a little bit, so then I can write a little bit more. And then when I reach a point again where I'm like, I still need to know more information, I'll often look at the hero's journey, James Campbell, mm-hmm. Chris Vogler's hero's journey, and kind of plot out where are we at and what's happening. Another good resource is Save the Cat, which I
yes,
think has really neat.
I heard about that. And they have a novel one too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very helpful. That's the one I have, I think, the Save the Cat for the novel.
Oh, okay.
And it's articulated some really good beats. And so I can, and I'll always find where my gaps are, and I'll be like, okay, I'm not quite sure how to fill that in. Mm-hmm. But so I just keep writing forward, which to me is kind of the panther. So I think I'm a combination of both.
How long does it take you to finish a book?
In the last couple of years, I've been averaging a book a year.
That's great.
So the whole drafting, and that's, it feels a little bit like mischaracterized, just because I had a year off 2 years ago, a full year of just writing, because I took a leave of absence after my father's death.
Yeah.
I took a leave of absence, and I just spent that year writing. And I wrote The Bones of Who We Are, which was the third and last book in that Canto series.
Lovely
and
title. I love that title.
Year. Excuse me?
That's a beautiful title. I love that title.
You
have really
you.
Good titles.
Yeah,
I'm terrible at writing titles.
I don't know where it came from. It's inspired somewhere. So I wrote that one in the year. And then after that book was done, I started writing The Story Starts Tell. And that started really fast. I think I had 40,000 words within 7 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
It just, I couldn't, I'm sorry, not 7 weeks, 7 days. I was like,
oh my gosh.
I just couldn't stop writing the story because it just came so fast.
Mm-hmm.
It had tons of holes in it. And it's at 135,000 words now. So that tells
wow.
you that there was a lot still to do.
Yeah.
But it took me probably 6 months to draft it into something that looked like a story and resembled what it is now, and then it took another 5 months to revise, add, and fix. And then now I'm in that process of editing and copy editing. So I think a year, it won't come out until October, but I think really, truly, if I look at how long this book took from beginning to finished quality, it would have been a year.
So do you think that the process gets faster the more you've written books, like, because you kind of know what you need to do?
I feel like every time I stare, like right now I'm in between, mm-hmm. and I'm like, every time I look at the computer and it's staring at me with a blank page, or I look at my notebook and it's a blank page, I panic because I'm like, I can't do it again.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen again. It was a one-hit wonder.
Wow. Yeah.
But then a story happens, and yes, I think that there's comfort in knowing I've been there before and have done it before, but I also think every story has its own personality. And, you know, like something that worked for one may not necessarily work for another, so you just, I just have to take from my toolkit and try to find ways to work through walls or, you know, obstacles. And so, but I do think that because I've gone through it now a few times, I feel a little more confident that, okay, I have the tools necessary to get through it. I can do it.
Yeah, and it's...
I also mean, I think it means sitting your butt in the seat and writing. You know, like, not coming up with excuses. So I do, I write every day. Even if it's a little bit, and even if it's terrible, I put something down.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like writing is so much psychological things that go on. It's like, it's like you need a lot of faith, because something happens, and some authors talk about it as like magic, right? You don't really know where it comes from, the idea, so you're kind of like betting that maybe it'll come soon, and it, the anxiety of it not coming, or maybe you won't be able to do it, or maybe you won't be able to finish it. Like, there's a lot of work that that's involved with just dealing with the demons in your head, you know. Not do you hire like an editor, or do you have beta readers?
I have beta readers. So this last book, I had four or five beta readers. And then I have never hired an editor, which I think if you read my first three, you'd see. because you just can't catch everything and whatnot. This time I had a wonderful Instagram friend who was like, I would love to help you edit. Can I please help you edit? And I was like, sure. But I do think that that is a very, very important part of the process, and it is important to have someone help you with that if you're not super good at it, just because I think I'm one of those people who's really good with story, and I think I get a sense of story, and I understand character development and those kinds of things, but the nitty-gritty pieces of commas and dashes and those kinds of things aren't necessarily on my radar. So having someone help me with that is like really awesome.
So are all these books, are they self, are you, did you self-publish them?
I did. Am an indie author. I've been rejected so many times, and even for this new book I've been rejected because I tried to go through the process again of trying to go traditional. And I don't know what it is, it is what it is. But I do feel like the stories were worth telling. And I think for probably for Swimming Sideways, a lot of it was because it's so niche, specifically because she's part Hawaiian, that maybe in a traditional setting, they weren't sure, how do you sell this?
Have you tried local publications? I'm just curious.
Excuse me?
Have you tried contacting like local publishers? I'm just curious. For that one.
No, I didn't try, just because most of our local publications, where we have Best Press and Columbia Publishing, both of them are really core centered on Hawaiian Pacific literature, and so I just didn't know that if it was a good fit, given that it's YA and it was also, it's also moving outside of the Hawaiian Pacific, because Abby doesn't stay in Hawaii, she leaves, so, and it's her experience in Oregon, so I just felt like probably I didn't try, maybe I should have, but I didn't try because I thought it maybe wouldn't be a good fit.
Well, I mean, I know self-publishing is a lot of, it's a lot of work, right? And your covers are beautiful too. How do you,
aren't they great?
Yeah, I love them. I mean, let me get them.
I'm so excited because Swimming Sideways won the best cover for fiction 2020 for the Independent Reader Discovery Awards. So that was really exciting.
How did you do the covers?
Her name is Sarah Oliver. She's from New Zealand. And I also met her via Instagram. I just started following each other, and I watched her work, and I saw her uploading, and she was always redesigning and putting up her covers, and I just loved her style. So when I knew I was going to redo the covers for the cantos, I was like, I want to check with her. And I did, and she was like, yeah, let's do it. And I love her work. Her work's great. She's actually working on the new book too.
Wow. And is it like costly to hire somebody to do your cover?
I think it probably depends on the artist and how well, I mean, how much work they have under their belt, as well as maybe their cred. So like Sarah now has a best fiction cover cred. So I don't know how that impacts the market. But I think that if you're an indie author / indie publisher, cover art is probably one of the most significant pieces that you should invest in. Three things I would say. One is buy the ISBN if you're an indie author. Two, get good editor, somebody to go through your work. And three, cover art. Because that's how people initially make connection to your work. It isn't the writing, it's the way it looks.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. Right? So... we don't want to judge a book by its cover, but you.
Yeah. And where do you sell your... is your books all sold online? I know, especially now, probably it's online, but in general, if somebody wants to get it...
books, because they're worldwide distribution, they can be found on any outlet online. They can also be... you can also walk into your indie bookstore and request it.
Oh, cool.
And they can get it. Yeah, so any place can get it.
That's great. I know there's a local bookshop in Kaimuki. I don't know if you've been there before. I think it's
the shop.
Yes. Yeah, I feel
I haven't been there yet, because when I learned about it, it was COVID. Stay-at-home orders that just happened. So
I completely see your
have
books
you been
there.
Out there.
Yes, I have, and I see your books there. So I mean, eventually, maybe you can. I don't know if you would do that, but I could totally see them having your books in the front or something. It fits in. Into their bookshop.
Yes, so. I will have to go look that up.
Well, we're getting close to the end. I guess, do you have anything else you want to share about, like, advice or any books? I know you said you already mentioned Save the Cat, but do you have any advice or other books that you would recommend for people who want to get published and self-published?
I feel like a really good resource that I always come back to is Stephen King's On Writing, a memoir on the craft.
That's a good one, yeah.
I read it and I reread it, and I don't know it's necessarily just about writing in general, but about storytelling, and I just absolutely love that resource.
I love that book. I love that book. You know, that's funny thing about that book is that it scares me so much. Like, he's not even talking about it. I saw my husband, he's not even, like, really talking about his stories, but it terrifies me. He's such a good storyteller, and just by a story about, do you remember he was telling a story about how he was like, he got in a real accident, like he was walking somewhere, and then that? And then the car hit him, and he's like in his real life own horror movie, and I was like, oh my God, like I have nightmares just hearing him
talk about it.
How does he do that? He's such a genius, he can make me scared just by.
So that one, but then the other thing I would say, and I said this in an interview on Instagram a couple days ago, was that read everything. And Stephen King even says this in that book, it's just you have to read. And reading in your genre, reading outside of your genre, reading long stories, short stories, nonfiction pieces, the importance of reading just helps the writer hone their craft. Really kind of helps. You look outside because you're looking at it through the lens of a writer rather than just the lens of a reader. And I've just learned so much from just reading.
That's really good advice. Well, thank you so much, Cami. It was such a fun thing to talk with you, and you gave so much wise words, as I knew you would, and I can tell you're a teacher, and I'm so inspiring. So thank you for your time. It was really fun.
Thank
I hope we
you.
Can do it again,
thank
actually.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, I hope we can do it again soon.
Yes. Yep, let me know. I'm here.
Thanks.
And if you need anything, let me know.
Thank you.